Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to a new episode of our Care in Action podcast, the podcast of Care Austria. And today we are again having an online conversation with a very special guest and colleague of mine. Today we talk to Dr. Dipmala Mala. Welcome, a warm welcome, Dipmala, to our podcast.
Thank you very much, Andrea. I am pleased, honored, and very excited to have this conversation and sharing with you.
Super. And like always, I make a very short introduction of the guest. Dr. Dipmala Mala serves as Chief Humanitarian Officer at CARE, and she is one of the most influential voices in global humanitarian aid. With over 20 years of experience in some of the world's most complex crisis zones, from the Middle East to Africa and Asia, she now leads CARE's strategic response to humanitarian emergencies. And there would be a lot more to say about the work of Dipmala, but we start our conversation and jump right into the topic. At the moment, Dipmala is based in the capital of Nairobi in Kenya. And what interests me and all our listeners most, Dipmala, you are leading CARE through some of the worst humanitarian crises of our time. But what drives you personally every morning, reading the news and having to get up and face another catastrophe? What drives you in this situation?
I mean, let us acknowledge that the situation is grim, the humanitarian crises are more frequent, more severe, and they are many. Several years ago, I used to work in some rural areas of South Sudan, and I met a bunch of women, very young mothers. Some of them were between, I think, 16 to 18 years old. And I clearly remember what some of them said to me in a conversation we were having under a tree. They said, "We have our babies on our backs and hunger is in our hearts, but we are still planting the seeds." So, Andrea, if they can plant for tomorrow with nothing, do I actually have any right or reason to be paralyzed by bad news? No, not at all. My job is very clear, and that is my passion, and that is what brings me out of bed. Turn headlines into action. Lives protected, teams motivated, resources moved, and we speak out and bear the witness of the crisis as well as how people are coping up with them.
And your answer, Dipmala, shows us very much that it depends also very much from your personal point of view, how you look at the world and how you perceive what is crisis, what is catastrophe, and what is an emergency, right? This depends very much on your own personal position, where you live, how you were raised, and of your own living situation, right? Because for us in a rich European country, I think many things seem more dramatic than for the people that are directly involved in a daily life for survival. What would you say on that?
I mean, it is true. The way I work, the way I chose where I would be based, when we interact more with the communities, our teams, we are out there. Yes, everything becomes a bit more real, a bit more personal, I would say, for me, which has its pros and cons. And it is overwhelming. Let's face it, it is overwhelming. Humanitarians do carry a lot of secondary trauma, and we are not very good at acknowledging it or addressing it. But again, traveling the world, meeting so many different people. But Andrea, I would say, like, even when I was in Gaza, let's say several months ago, one of the most shocking crises that I have seen, the need, the depth, same what I saw in Sudan. But at the end of the day, you sit with your field team, we have a little laugh, and then somebody comes and says, "Hey, we completed the distributions." And somebody said, "Oh, my truck got stuck. We could not." And then we say, "All right, try tomorrow." All this gives you a feeling at the same time. The need is very big, but it can be done. And I must tell you, I tell this to our teams all the time, given the world in which we live now. The day we decided to be a humanitarian, I think it was for this day. It was for this day. We don't need a light when there is sunlight. We need light when it is dark. So from a humanitarian crisis perspective, there are moments which feel quite depressing. So that's time for action. And I grew up in India. Fortunately, my family gave me enough chance, opportunity to make my choices, to study, to travel the world. And I have an extremely strong grandmother. I saw her in action, you know, traveling from villages to villages, mobilizing people. So my three-year-old mind, Andrea, grew up seeing that, learning that a woman going traveling on her own, conducting meetings, giving speeches, that definitely shaped. So this is just a constant journey, Andrea, I would say. The drive inside me to do something to make it less bad. And there are moments where I have felt, what can we actually do here? The need is so big. And then I feel if one community, one team, one hospital, one school did better today because of some contribution from CARE, definitely worth it.
Definitely worth it, and definitely worth donating for not only the humanitarian work of CARE, because you shared with us now in a very personal way that in the center of our work, in spite of the fact that we have to reach millions of people sometimes, especially with our emergency interventions, but still in the center, in the focus of our work, is the single individual, right?
Always. When we say millions, the problem sometimes is so big, but who are these millions?
Mm-hmm.
Who are these?
People like me, right?
Exactly, people like you and me. And the more we travel, and I hope, Andrea, you and I travel together soon, the more we travel, you have a conversation. Yes, the differences are huge. Education, privilege, exposure, how essential needs. But remove all that, remove one or two layers, same heart, same emotion, same body language, same way we smile, same tears. And it's just, so let me share an example here when you says women like you and me. And I know, Andrea, you're going to love this one. I think last one I was in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and there was this woman, young. I wasn't sure of her age. She looked like 14, 15, but then she was 17. But because of lack of food and everything, her growth was not optimal. She really wanted to tell a story. And let me make it a bit shorter. So she started sharing, some women, I think 8 or 9 of us, were sitting in a group, and then she was sharing how she was raped by armed men. And the way she described it, she said, I saw my period only once, and then she became pregnant. And then she didn't know how to deal with pregnancy. She was orphaned. She was fending for herself. She delivered a baby. There was no way for her to take care of the baby. She tried to commit suicide by drowning herself in the lake. That also did not work. And then I noticed her baby was not wearing any clothes, but just wrapped in fabric. And she said 2 days ago, she sold the last cloth on her baby to buy food for the baby. And as she was describing, she was obviously crying. I had tears in my eyes. And once her story was over, I looked up, all those 7 or 8 women were crying. And I thought, all these women have seen, experienced, felt all of this. And this moment, of course, was of profound sadness, but I felt a solidarity. I felt a oneness. I felt a togetherness where I'll probably never meet them again, but we are in this moment sharing this pain as humans. And anyone, all of us, all our listeners, can have that experience. The only thing you need to do, open your heart a little bit.
Absolutely. And I was thinking when I was listening to you, and this really, it's not a heartbreaking story, because there are millions of stories like that that we could share with our listeners. It really leads you to the core of being a human, and that we have so much more together then we assume first sight. And I think it's like you said, it's only remove one or two layers, and then we are thrown back to the essence of humanity, which leads us to the essence of humanitarian aid, which is very much debated today. I would say too much to be debated, because it is time for action. At the moment, we have the incredible number of over 300 million people in this world in need of humanitarian aid. And that means they are not able to supply for their own survival. So in this point, we face at the moment a situation. Everybody has heard about the shortage of aid in the US. Not so many might have heard that also the UN system, it has an anniversary ahead, like CARE, 80th anniversary of the United Nations, 80th anniversary also of CARE. And in all this, we are now in the situation of having more than 300 million people in dire need of emergency support, plus massive aid cuts, not only in the United States, but all of us have heard about it, but also in many European countries, in many large institutions. And I'm a bit worried looking at the debates that we are leading, and if we are focusing enough on the humanitarian principles that have guided us, all of us, for so long. What's your view on that, Dipmala?
Like you, I'm also worried. And this, the number of people in humanitarian need, 300 million going hungry, this also has grown over the years. This has really grown over the years. How did we get here? Let's say there's a family living somewhere, and it could be anywhere. It could even be Austria. Remember, I never thought as a humanitarian that we would be running humanitarian responses in Ukraine and Poland and Hungary and Slovakia. So imagine three shockwaves crash into the same community and family at once. Climate chaos, conflict, and a totally crushing cost of living. That means their lifeboat, which was meant to rescue them or take them wherever they wanted to, it's basically broken. So this combination of several factors, and we will talk about it more in subsequently, the effect of wars, conflicts, is massive on increasing humanitarian need. Climate shocks are harder. When I started working in this sector, I can say we, right? We used to, it was natural disaster. Now, how natural is it? Because a lot of it is climate related. So by all this, we can say the safety nets for communities, they have holes. So put simply, floods, guns, inflation have emptied the cupboard, and the policymakers, donors, politicians, member states, foundations, they did not refill it. That is why we keep saying hunger is made by human choices. And yes, we are very much aware of the debate and the question. But I think what is not debatable at all is the need, its scale, and its severity. The debate or the questions which we get, and also from a very, very genuine learning point of view of curiosity about, is it working? Is it effective? For how long is it? Those questions, those debates are really, let's say, not contributing in this situation where actually the moment is for the world to stand together. Now, maybe when we are thinking from whatever position we are, you may be a humanitarian, you may be a active person in your community, you may be running a small business. Still, with all these debates, I still want to believe we essentially as humans, we want to help. We want the situation to get better. We want to make sure that we do our part in reducing the suffering. The questions sometimes arise, is international aid, is this the right way to do it? Is there another way to do it? The money which I'm donating, is it, you know, going in the right place, in the right way? So this whole line, is aid effective? This travels fast. But I always say the loudest criticisms come from a distance. The loudest criticism of the effectiveness of aid, they come from a distance. I have rarely seen it come from the rubble, the flooding, the heat, the hunger. A newborn gasping for breath is kept alive by a clinic supported by humanitarian aid, by a contribution made by our listeners, our supporters, people who have a relationship, let's say, with Care Austria for years. A cash card, which will let the mom choose what her family needs. Maybe a tent after flood becomes a classroom with the help of aid. That's what aid does, Andrea, quietly, every single day. And let's accept it. Is it perfect? No. But in places where everything else fails, aid saves lives. So any cut of aid made by anyone, anywhere, it'll sound harsh, but it means deaths. So now is the time to
ask. Absolutely. But unfortunately, we see a series of responsible political leaders who are doing aid cuts and who are questioning the effectiveness of what we are doing. And I think it is really not only time to act, but it is also time for us as one of the leading agencies providing humanitarian aid in so many communities around the globe to shed light on these topics and to be brave enough also to answer some of these sensitive questions. And at the same time, we have to deliver what we have to deliver and also what is the expectation of the communities we are working with that we are doing. One of the main problems that I see, and you mentioned it some years ago, we talked about natural disaster, and you said how natural is a climate-impacted disaster. And I would even add to what you said that in many cases we don't have only one cause for emergency, but many layers that add to really a major emergency situation like climate impact, war, long-lasting wars, conflicts, you name it. So it is a conglomerate of causes that nowadays we have to deal with. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but we have a long these long-lasting emergencies. This is also a phenomenon that was also there historically, but now they are becoming more and more. You already mentioned Gaza, you mentioned Ukraine. There is no end line in sight, right? For the people who are in this situation, they have to endure that for years, same in Sudan.
Absolutely. And you made a very important point that as agencies, as humanitarians, we have to shed a light. And a great example is the Breaking the Silence report, which Care Austria does. It's an amazing report being done for several years continuously, and which also puts things in perspective. So the as you very, very rightly said, that the cause of the crisis is always multifold. There are many reasons. Many years ago, when many of the humanitarians started working, I remember there used to be phases: relief, like we do life-saving work; recovery, when we help people to, you know, get back into livelihood, education, setting up the systems, and then get into development. Now, this spectrum does not work like that. We have so many examples, and I know, Andrea, that you know this very, very well, that in many places we support the communities. They are, you know, coping up, getting better. We are connecting them to the markets. Livelihoods are happening. But another conflict, another climate crisis, and we are back into the life-saving mode. So many of these problems, the protracted crisis, as you very, very correctly mentioned, they are related to some political dynamics. And often I feel that we are trying to find humanitarian solutions to political problems. And it sometimes feels, you mentioned Sudan, it feels like we are mopping the floor while the tap is on. So yes, there is an issue of underlying causes and crisis, but if we look at our role as humanitarians, going back to my example of mopping the floor while the tap is on, we are humanitarians. We will continue mopping the floor, because if that floor is not mopped today, some kids are going to die, some women might die in childbirth, and some children will not complete their education. Some youth is going to, you know, give up his or her dream to complete their degree. So this work is critically, critically urgent, but it is not the final solution. The final solution is when people recover and thrive and get back into the context and the societies which nurture each other. But if we don't address the urgency of today, like I was in Syria in January, and we were talking about, so we went to Damascus after many, many years, and we were talking about this context about building the economic stability and working on livelihoods, bringing on systems. And there was this community members, we were sitting in buildings which were probably bombed for several years, no roof, really, really shivering cold, and it was even raining that day. And these people had lots of hope that now we have the chance to rebuild our country. And then some others started talking about development and everything. Then they said, all that is true, but if we don't do life-saving work today, we will have no one alive left to come to your school or come to your hospital or be a part of that business. So through this, I'm trying to highlight the urgency of the situation, and at the same time also highlight to everybody who's in this conversation that humanitarian work is the beginning, not the end.
It is the beginning of controlling also the tap, right?
That is exactly how it is.
Otherwise, as you said, there might not be enough people left to rebuild a civil society that every country, every state would need. So let's take a little bit of deeper dive of how CARE approaches communities, how we really help people with humanitarian aid, because we are not doing that alone. Normally, we do that in partnership with a lot of local actors and talking about local organizations. For CARE, it is crucial that we involve as many women-led organizations on the ground as possible. So for our listeners, Dipmala, from your personal point of view, why is that so important? Isn't it the same whether a male or female-led organization is involved in any emergency intervention? What is your take on that?
Let us all pause for a moment and think, due to whatever reason, wherever in the world, if there is very, very less and scarce food at home, who is going to eat least, who is going to eat last, and who is going to give up the food? I doubt it is the men. It is the women, which means from the start, the women are trying to respond to the crisis. I've seen this, learned this, experienced this. The first responders, who is the first responder in a crisis? I would say don't believe any agency, national, international, if they say they are the first responders. Even if I say we are the first responders, please don't believe. Because the first responders are always the women. Either they are an informal group, or they have their organization, or they are working as community leaders. They are the first responders. They are not victims waiting for need, but they are the ones who have the solutions. And we have seen this and learned this in our work across the globe, 80 years now, in so many different contexts. The women, they are there before, during, and after. Let's say the hashtags are there. After the news headline is fading, we can say a women's cooperative in Sudan. A tremendous work has been done by women's groups in Sudan, where many of the other organizations are even struggling to access those areas. We know of groups of women in Yemen. They are keeping water points open through the violence. So they don't need parachutes. They only need fair, direct funding, support, trust, and training, capacity building from organizations like CARE. So let me end, dear Andrea, by saying that if we go by economics, This is more efficient and more cheaper. If we go by the logic of doing the right thing, so is it not the most right thing for the people who know the business, who know the crisis, who know the solution to be leading it? It makes sense from every perspective. And this is not only mine and your opinion. This has been proven by studies. This is evidenced. And let me end by saying, we started by our conversation very rightly by how grim the humanitarian context is. Please listen to a woman-led organization representative in DRC, and they will immediately make you feel there is a solution. It is possible. They are doing it in a small way. So the smartest thing and the most ethical thing is to support them to do better, stronger, bigger, and more.
You are so absolutely right when you say, don't believe us. CARE is never saying we are the first responders on the ground, because it's always the people that are affected by whatever happens to them that leads to this emergency situation. And you could see it also during the last earthquakes. In spite of the fact that CARE in many of the cases is on the ground, still the people affected are fighting for their life, and their small institutions are the ones who are the first, and CARE and others are in the second row. But in many countries, we have a presence, and so we can support people also before disaster hits to get somehow prepared and to train them how to react when flooding hits, an earthquake hits, or whatever. At the same time, we have a big, not only discussion, these are facts, that it was never so dangerous for humanitarian workers to help others. So from my European perspective, I have the impression that humanitarian law is not respected highly like it was in the last 50 years, let's say. I know that it was always under threat, but in the way we see it now, we see many people killed when they help others. We see that many organizations, be them local or international, are not getting access or safe access. Gaza is a special case in itself, because there we see that access is denied for weeks, months, and the aid items are waiting at the border. At the same time, people are really struggling for survival. So how can we get all the stakeholders back on track to respect humanitarian work and to respect safety for humanitarian workers, and not to politicize every step we have to take?
That is such an important point. And again, Andrea, you have touched, for me, you have touched where it hurts. Aid workers are being robbed, murdered, raped, intimidated, and they are still on the ground. We get a reaction from decision makers, parties to conflict, politicians, but those words are promises to do better, pledges to investigate, condolences for the losses, press releases, political assurances. But it is not enough. We are bleeding out from 1,000 cuts. And the reality is, aid work depends on aid workers by definition. And as you said, very rightly, the stories of aid workers killed, or you know, attacks on aid convoys, stopping of humanitarian access, it has become all too common. Mm-hmm. In all my work and travel, I have witnessed amazing bravery from colleagues, and also from the people who have already lost everything. But there is no safety if parties to conflict and governments are allowed to act as if they have no responsibility towards us. Now, let me say one thing, that when an aid worker, and I can say because I am one, and, you know, I've interacted with many, it's been several years doing this, we know this work is dangerous. We know when our friends, family that we leave back home, they know that it is a risky environment, it is a war zone. However, The humanitarians, and I think this trust has really broken in the recent years, but the humanitarians really believed the promises, believed that everybody who accepted the international humanitarian law is going to respect and let the aid work continue. But it is a time when, if I may say very personally, it's a moment where even the most altruistic of us are frustrated and agitated. So you said a very, very, two very important words. And those two words should never be taken together. Humanitarian aid and politicization. This should never be together, because every delay, every obstruction means people being deprived. What can be done? Firstly, the member states, governments, parties to conflict, decision makers must really stop the attacks, and the time for talking is over. And common citizens like us, we should be asking those questions to our representatives, and we should always be keeping sight on where it is happening, being aware, raising a voice, influencing your policymakers, influencing your decision makers. We all have a lot of voice now, a lot of reach now, a lot of exposure now because of the digital age, social media everywhere. Please, we all need to come together to stop the normalization. To stop the normalization, I cannot tell you how many times when we are talking about another aid worker attacked, I have heard people say, oh, it was very dangerous. Why were they there? They were there doing their job of saving lives. So all of us have a role here, and we as a people have to hold our decision makers accountable and really stop these senseless attacks. And let me end by saying that it must be recognized that those who rush in to help when all others turn away, give the humanitarians protection they need, give them protection. And if you have a minute, please say well done.
So wisely said. And I see that many people who trust organizations like CARE and its partners, and who donate for our not only emergency work, but mainly for emergency work, these are the thousands of thank yous that you don't hear on a daily basis, but CARE organizations, CARE partners like CARE Austria, we are also here to channel these trust, these proofs of trust and thank yous to the humanitarian workers who are on the ground implementing in a very responsive and adequate way life-saving measurements to really literally millions of people. And this is also now leading a little bit to the role that CARE, we are a global confederation, and the role that CARE members like CARE Austria do play in such a confederation. And the invitation to our CARE in Action podcast, which is constantly growing, we are happy to win more and more listeners, is also should also show you a big thank you also from the staff of CARE Austria, not only to you, but to your teams and to all the colleagues bringing humanitarian work to life with the funding that CARE partners like CARE Austria and many others are providing. And I hope that many people who are listening now to us gain a lot of trust out of this conversation to say CARE is a trustworthy organization. And as you said, it's a natural instinct, even I would say, that if we face catastrophes, emergencies, then we want to help. And what's the best way to help for a citizen in Central Europe, like in Austria and the neighboring countries? It is trust any organization, donate, and then we don't only promise, we can prove that we bring the donation there where it is most needed. And as you have heard in this podcast, people on the ground, humanitarian workers, unfortunately risk also their own lives nearly on a daily basis to deliver to those most in need. Could you encourage our listeners in Austria and abroad a little bit to really have this trust and to really donate, because more than 300 people in need of humanitarian aid, this is something we cannot shoulder alone. We need the help of millions of people, literally, right?
And also, I want to tell our listeners that every single donation, every single effort really, really matters. Sometimes, if at all, there's a thought like this, okay, this is a smaller donation, how would it matter? It would. Because just think about it. One small action from you could actually ensure that one family will have clean water for the whole week. So every action is critical. And I would also say, in addition to inviting our donors and trying my best to assure them that they can trust not only our integrity and intention, which is beyond question, but also trust our systems. We take everything very seriously, because when a donor gives us money, it's a very good action. But more than that, for us at CARE, it's a responsibility, that because you gave us that amount of money with a lot of trust, that is very precious. And trust is fragile. Trust is delicate. So CARE has really strong systems so that we can ensure that the money which we get is put to the right place for the right action at the right time. And we have very efficient ways to measure the impact. Did this work or this project or this borehole or this classroom or this hospital give actually that much relief to the community that it was intended? So we really have that, all those systems. And radical transparency is our way of working. You're very much welcome to gain more information. And I would say, please come and be a humanitarian. We are the humanitarians on the ground wearing boots, but you can be a humanitarian anywhere. There are some humanitarians in boots, like the CARE teams, and there are some humanitarians in suits who may live in Austria, but they are still humanitarian because they are helping families in Haiti and in Myanmar and in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. So join us, be humanitarians. Humanitarian come in always. And we have been here for 80 years. And hopefully that should tell you how we have adapted to the needs, proven our ability, because in the end, it's not about CARE. When Andrea is making a request, a plea to support, it's not for CARE. It's for those for who CARE stands. It is for those communities which CARE is committed to. So we like to think of us, in addition to being humanitarian impact makers, we also like to think of us as the channels, the vehicles who will translate your empathy into actual action on the ground somewhere far away in the world.
I really love this appeal and I want to echo it. Let's all become humanitarians. This is a very good reminder also for the situation many countries in Europe are in. Let's open our minds and our hearts and support each other. I know this sounds now a little bit not typically CARE and not typically the CARE in Action podcast, but we can all be humanitarians. And as Deepmala said so rightly, we support people who are in struggle to survive, and humanitarian aid, the numbers are increasing. And this alone is something that should be a call to action, that we all become more humanitarians, not only CARE, not only CARE Austria, but all our appreciated listeners. And I really hope that you gain some insight and that you gain some additional trust in the work of CARE, and that you could also see what fabulous colleagues we are having out there who ensure that your donation reaches those who are most in need. So, Deepmala, thank you very much. I really appreciated this podcast. And all our listeners, please give us a like, recommend us to your friends and families, and make sure that you don't miss the next episode of CARE in Action. Thank you, Deepmala.
And Andrea, if you allow, I let me pass one more message. I think sometime back I was in Turkey when the big earthquake hit, and then people were living in tents and in very difficult situations. And then it was raining and it was very, very cold. And CARE was delivering some relief there in terms of food, hot water, drinking water, and tents. And let me tell you what a woman said to me. Because they know that donations are coming from various parts of the world. This woman said, because we were able to put a shelter, she said, "Tonight my children will sleep dry because strangers cared for us. Please be that stranger."
I couldn't have ended this podcast better. Thank you, Deepmala.
Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thank you for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about Care and our projects, visit care.at. There you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.